This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning Show on the Horse Radio Network for May 16th, 2013, episode 659.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Let's kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
That's right, it's Thursday. So that means you only have one day left to surf the web for off-kilter classifieds. Email them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com with really bad ads in the subject line. On tomorrow's live show, like we do every Friday, the reading of the ads will reveal the best of the worst. And the three clever listeners who submitted what Glenn and Jamie deemed to be the best of the worst will be in the running for the following group of fantastic prizes. A gift pack of Dr. Rose's Remedies Skin Treatment Salve, Uncle Jimmy's Licky Things and Squeezy Buns gift pack, and, from Leather Therapy, a 16-ounce saddle pad and blanket wash, and a 16-ounce saddle pad and blanket rinse. And now, sit back and enjoy this previously aired masterpiece, gleaned from the Hit'em Audio Vault.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here. It's a happy day here in Florida because our friend Elizabeth, the tropical storm, has finally, after 5 days, decided to vacate and head across the state just north of us and out into the Atlantic Ocean and has stopped raining. Woohoo! We might even see the sun today.
Are you cheating on Debbie? Because I thought it was Debbie.
Did I say Debbie?
You said Elizabeth. So which woman is it that is causing problems for you?
Did I say Elizabeth? I was just reading an email from an Elizabeth, so that's why I said Elizabeth,
I guess. I gotcha. You can't keep track of all these women. You know, I'm appreciating the fact, Glenn, that you are going to take today to be positive because we need a little more positive attitude. There's all the bad news. There's all this and all that. And as of yesterday, I decided after seeing the movie, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, we had to find the bright spots. And so the bright spot is, Glenn, that you guys got rain. You guys got a lot of rain. Yes, I know I've been watching the news and it's been like flooding and craziness. However, the rest of the country is in a total drought. Hay prices are going to skyrocket again this year. And it's over 100 degrees in like New York City for like the 10th day in a row. So appreciate the nice, cooling, gentle rain that you guys had. And take it for that. I mean, really.
Okay, I'm going to stay positive, and I'm going to give our best, though. Something we haven't mentioned, and I know this is one of your favorite parts of the country, and it's gotten worse in the last couple of days, and we have not mentioned it and said our best wishes out to everybody, including the horse owners that live in Colorado with all the fires they've been having. And we do want to send our best wishes out to, and we're thinking about you guys because it's been tough. They've set up all kinds of facilities now to take in horses, and apparently they've been flooding in. And I know that you love Colorado, and that's partly where you and Chad go all the time on vacation.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we love it up there, and it's definitely tough. I mean, even the Air Force is, they have a big Air Force Academy, and the mountains above the academy are on fire. So they're really having a hard time out there in Colorado, and or I should say up there in Colorado, and we definitely send our best to them. And you know, just if we could just move your little friend Debbie just a little bit across the country and just dump some rain on them, my God, it'd be great.
Give them 25 inches of rain.
Seriously.
All right, Jennifer, what's coming up?
On today's Confirmatory List Wednesday edition, we'll enjoy a little horse training myth eradication with Eric Dirks, who you may remember from the outrageously popular Retired Racehorse Training Challenge that we covered early this year. And being Wednesday and all, Michelle and Dr. Jones from thehorse.com are here to provide, hopefully, a positive spin on some veterinary condition or another. And happy birthday to the fellow who played in our favorite horse movie, Seabiscuit, Tobey Maguire.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Toby. And we also wanted to remind you, Jennifer is opening the chat right now. If she's forgotten, the chat will be open, so you can find that. If you want to chat with other listeners during the show, you can go in. Apparently had a lively conversation going on there yesterday. You can go over to blogtalkradio.com. Look for Horses in the Morning on the homepage there. Click on it and page. You can also listen to the show from there as well. And Jamie, I'm going to speak to Jennifer here for a second. Hey, Jennifer, don't let Jamie go to any more End of the World movies. It's just, it affects her. Oh, my God. All right. Anyway, Jamie, I, because of your new positive attitude, have a new Daily Whinny for you today, and here it is.
Okay.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
There. Well, Beatles to start the day.
That's good day, the sound effects for the Daily Whinnies now?
No, but for today it is, okay. Because you're all positive and upbeat, and the sun's finally out here in Florida, so a little good day sunshine. A little hey, my Daily Whinny goes out, too. This is a positive story. You remember, my wife knows everything, and my wife doesn't know. We've covered that 1,000 times here on the show, that race. And we talked about my wife doesn't know being in a race and not doing so well a couple weeks ago, and we kept saying they need to retire this horse. She's been around long enough. Well, they did. They did retire. She went out to an adoption agency, and it was immediately adopted. And this is who my Daily Whinny goes out to a Carol Davison, owner-operator of Fleetwood Equestrian Services, and she is out of Howell, New Jersey. So congratulations to her. She's getting this horse in and going to train her as a show hunter. And she says the mare's natural balance and beautiful walk are indicators of her future talent in the show ring. So both the horses now, my wife doesn't know and my wife knows everything, have been adopted out. So congratulations to both of them. Hopefully they have terrific new careers.
See, that's the benefit right there of naming a thoroughbred a great name, is because of these two horses obviously going neck and neck in the final stretch, my wife knows everything and the wife doesn't know. That gave these horses a future. And naming, you know, like, bless his heart, Jet, naming him Bumpity. That's his name.
Bumpity?
That's his regiment, Bumpity. And, like, I'm sorry, but you're not setting your horse up for success. Do you know what Joey's name is? Joey's a, it's like, might as well call him Loser. His name is Ride the Bench. Like, hi, oh. I never got in the
ride
game.
The bench
I ride the
Bumpity?
Bench.
Can you imagine those Bumpity? Two going down the stretch?
Exactly. It's very forgettable. So the fact that they named these two horses such great names, and then they end neck and neck, I swear that saved their life. Obviously, it made Larry Kalmus's career because he's now calling the Triple Crown races. He'll never admit to that, but that's why it happened. And just good for them. That's so fantastic. Yay to all the retired racehorses that get home. Woohoo!
All right, here we go.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
I keep waiting for the whinny at the end of it. I gave it to you. So my Daily Whinny actually goes to some people in Colorado, but they're not getting the Daily Whinny because they've been saving horses from fire. A dozen volunteers last weekend spent their entire weekend removing barbed wire from an area around Colorado, in Colorado, that is where the wild horses roam. Volunteers rolled, and do you know how tough this job has to be, to roll and remove 780 pounds of rusty old barbed wire from three separate areas in the Sandwash herd management area for basically for nothing. They went out there, they rolled the barbed wire just in case the Mustangs that roam through there get stuck. this barbed wire was from like the 1940s. There was barbed wire strung through junipers to create wings to funnel wild horses into a rusty old corral. There was five acres of barbed wire that was around an old fence, like an old fence in an old pond where they would try to trap wild horses. Just the whole thing is so awful. And these people spent their entire weekend outside in the heat, rolling rusty old barbed wire. I'm sure they were cut. They had to get tetanus shots, every single one of them. And they just went out there and they did it. So that is basically why they get my Daily Winnie, and they also get this.
Our first farm, Jamie, was about 100 acres, a little over 100 acres, and it had been a cow farm before us, so there was barbed wire on all the fences, and we had to do that job of removing the barbed wire, not 780 pounds worth, but enough. And it is the most unruly, ungainly stuff you ever want to deal with.
It's just awful.
It just doesn't seem to cooperate, and it's not necessarily, you can wear thick gloves on your hands, but it just flies around, and then it cuts your legs, and it's just bad. And if you're right, it's always rusty, and then it breaks, or, you know, you're dealing with it and trying to roll it, and it breaks into pieces, and you got little pieces of barbed wire everywhere. Yeah, it's just pretty much a mess.
What was really cool is they actually took it to a scrap metal recycling facility, and all of the proceeds for the recycled barbed wire were given to the Sandwash Basin Wild Horse Club. So the money even went back kind of into the Mustang's pocket, if you will. So just great for people going out and taking care of the Mustangs in the wild. Awesome.
Terrific, and I wanted to remind everybody that this Friday we will have really bad ads, so get yours in. We're not sure what the prize is yet. We'll let you know tomorrow, but get your ads in today to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Just stop over to Craigslist. It'll only take you a couple minutes to find a really bad ad to submit. We've gotten some really good ones lately, so please do that. So, Jamie, last night I did the Tim Taylor thing, and again, it stopped raining for a couple hours, so I went over to my brother's house to cut up a big tree that almost fell on his house and get it out of his yard. Well, we got a lot done last night. We got a couple hours without rain, and we managed to get a bunch of it cut up. But when I got there, by the way, Jennifer, you can tune out now. When I got there, my brother and his wife were standing in the garage looking at something. So I walk over, and he says, "I think we got a problem." Well, you know, when it rains here in Florida, there's a couple things that happen, especially when you get 15, 20, 25 inches of rain. Critters start coming out of the woodwork, and the critters are the fire ants, the red fire ants, just start coming out of the ground, and they're just nasty. And then you got the frogs. You got the frogs that just inundate the places. You have the alligators, which apparently have been coming out of out of many areas. And then you have the snakes. Well, what they had, Jamie, she has a little section where she keeps her bottles of horse stuff on the floor in the corner of the garage. You know, like the oil and fly spray and things like that.
Okay, well, okay.
She went down, I'm going to freak you out. She went down to grab one of the bottles, and I don't know how she saw this because they're not big snakes. There was a pygmy rattlesnake wrapped around the top of her bleach bottle. And they only get to about 18 inches, so they're not very thick. You know, they're pretty small. And it was entirely wrapped around the top of her bleach bottle, and she went in to grab that. And she fortunately saw it. So now we have this, you know, poisonous snake in their garage wrapped around a bleach bottle, completely wrapped around the thing. And we're like, okay, now what do we do? By the way,
Yeah. How did you know? Did you know immediately it was a rattlesnake? Was it rattling?
My brother is the snake expert for the neighborhood, so he actually sends out the email with all those kinds of snakes and everything. And we don't think it was a full grown one, but it had the triangle head and all that stuff.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. So
the young ones are the really poisonous ones, by the way. So
I thought they'd be less poisonous. I didn't know that.
No, they're way more poisonous than the adults.
Oh, good to know. Good to know after. So we were like, okay, what do we do? And it's like, we got to get it off the bottle somehow so we can take care of this because, you know, we wanted to kill it so that it wasn't going to kill us or the horses or the animals. So it was like, what do we do? I voted for it. He turned it down. I just wanted to get it with the chainsaw. But he didn't like that idea. So So I ended up, we ended up knocking the bottle over. He took off, and I managed in one swipe to get it with the shovel. So nobody was hurt in the making of this movie except the snake. The snake did not make it through. But he lived for 10 minutes after that. They're nasty little critters.
Wait, hold up. You're the snake that you swiped off a bottle of bleach, and you hit it with a shovel, and it, then it lived for 10 minutes? Was it, like, headless? What did you do? I don't even want to know.
I cut it in half, and it, the front half lived for 10 minutes.
Okay, this is not positive.
It was for us. We didn't get bit. My sister-in-law could have got... Look at the positive, Jamie. That's what you just said. My sister-in-law could have got bit by a poisonous snake. She saw it, and we dealt with the situation. Very positive.
Wow. That's fantastic. So exciting.
Every day I have a snake story.
You know, you make a good point. That is getting in touch with wildlife. And fantastic that you were there to swoop in and save the day, Glenn. Good job. Good job.
I got lucky. I still wanted to cut it with the chainsaw, but I lost.
Ew, gross. Bleach and snake blood all over the place. Disgusting. Hey, let's just move on, shall we? Our next guest is actually on the line right now, and I'm kind of embarrassed that he just heard your snake story because it kind of sounded a little limpy there, Glenn. Eric Dirks is on the phone with us, and hopefully, we'd love to have him on kind of in a regular segment, whether he likes it or not. We haven't even asked him that. But to talk about myth-busting, Eric Dirks is the kind of now, you're kind of the expert, Eric, as far as training off-the-track thoroughbreds. I mean, am I right?
Wow, that's a cool title to have.
You
thanks
got promoted.
A lot, Glenn and Jamie.
Well, you know, you were the winner of the retired racehorse training project, and you're writing articles now, and you're doing videos, and you're doing clinics and stuff you always did, you know, before. But now we're talking today a little bit about off the track thoroughbred training myths, and we're going to have you bust those a little bit. And what are you going to talk to us about today, Eric?
Well, I think the biggest myth out there with off-the-track thoroughbreds is people make up for what they have in front of them based on their expectations from their horse. And unfortunately today, most people, the most common rider has an agenda that they put on their horse immediately. For example, a person may purchase a horse from the track and have high expectations of their horse, wanting to make it an eventer, a dressage horse, or a show jumper, and they immediately get right to training. And when they do that, they put these unneeded expectations on the horse, and the horse, I don't know about you, but anytime I'm told what to do on somebody else's agenda, my hair goes up alone. So, So it's. I think we really need to slow our world down, not just for horses, but for just common courtesy of conversation. And
so, Eric,
I think that's what. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just.
I think that's what's missing in horse training today.
Yeah, you know, and I think that there's nothing more important than having patience, especially with dealing with an off-the-track thoroughbred. So people get this horse off the track, and they're like, here we go, we got an eventer, and they just get right to work. What do you think that they could do differently as opposed to kind of put their expectations on this horse and try to demand results? What's a different approach that they could take?
Well, the first thing you have to be aware of is look at the little steps first. Like the most progress I get out of the horse is when I gain their trust and they show their trust through their personality. But just the little things of just taking your horse out of the stall and giving them a long grooming with a curry comb can do lots of training steps. Instead of right away putting the saddle bridle on them and doing the work in the arena. If you do the hands-on work off their back, a lot of the training on their back can be achieved as well. So I find that my success rate really increases when the horse basically knows who's taking care of them. And that's a big deal.
And I totally agree with you, and definitely guilty about shortcutting it. Oh, I'm in a hurry. We'll just knock off the saddle area, throw the tack on, and go. But you're right. For these off-the-track thoroughbreds, they need that kind of connection time with you, especially because not everybody can take care of their own horses at their house. They need that time with you because you're not the one maybe that feeds them if you keep them at a boarding facility. They need to know that you're the central caretaker to establish that trust. Would you say that's right?
Exactly. And unfortunately, today, you know, you have a lot of training gimmicks out there. And not that there's anything wrong with them. I mean, I think this great natural horsemanship stuff being put out there. But it's patenting basically common sense. And unfortunately, we have to rely on somebody else patenting this common sense, and we're just swallowing it right up. And when you think of the Pirelli stuff, the natural horsemanship, it just forces us to take our time through several steps in training, and that's gaining the horse's trust. And even while you're on your horse's back, so you ask your horse to move forward off the leg, and because they don't immediately, what are the steps that you do to get your horse to step off your leg? Or do you get frustrated and all of a sudden force is applied? And nothing gets accomplished through force.
So breaking that down then, and I know this might be just getting a little simple on the whole myth-busting idea, but breaking it down then, what do you think? Because I find that that's a common problem, obviously, with the off-the-track thoroughbreds, because they've never really had legs wrapped around them. How would you break that down and make it easier to communicate? Just
well,
moving forward.
Well, I do a lot of work. I do a lot of work in hand, and just them stepping away from the whip. I like, even for the horse, when I'm on their back, to step off of the air between my leg and the horse, not that I have to squeeze. So that's the general impression is of having the horse in front of your leg, that the horse wants to go forward. This is why I love the thoroughbred breed, because they're so wanting to work for us. It's just about how we ask them. So when on the ground, when I ask them to move forward with me with lead line, I don't want to have to pull them along. But if they move willingly and follow me instead of me pulling them, that's already the first step. How I go about doing that is maybe an aid with the whip, just to kind of wave behind them, giving them a little pressure. And if they don't respond, a little light tap, and they will give you some kind of response. They may even get annoyed with the tap of the whip or the tap of the leg. But keep repeating the aid instead of kicking any harder. Because the horse is annoyed, he's going to want to relieve that pressure. So if you read the horse, and let's say you put your leg on and the horse pins his ears back, he's annoyed. Well, repeat the aid again and just tap him with the leg or the whip. And just keep repeating until you get your desired response. When you get your desired response, the aid stops. You could give them a reward. That's the breakdown of the whole idea. And once you become really unconscious about it, it happens so fast. For me, it's quite natural because I've done this for a very long time. So for me, when I'm teaching it to other riders, I break it down to this point. Now I'm very conscious of what I do when I'm riding.
Yeah, and definitely I find that when you do put that pressure on, I tend to think of it as I'm asking the horse a question, and I'm going to keep repeating the question until I get the correct answer. Once I get the correct answer, I stop asking. And then how important
is it at
that
moment? Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Unfortunately, people with their expectations, what happens is they immediately, they ask a question and they want the right answer. And a person without the expectations is going to be looking beyond that a little bit. They're going to be looking for the desired response, but they're also going to be reading their horse and taking inventory of how their horse reads them.
Now, how important is it to have well-timed praise? And do you find that thoroughbreds really appreciate the good boy and the petting, or are they more kind of aloof and don't really care about that kind of thing?
I think that's it's an extremely important to reward them. However, you know, when you get your desired response, reward them, but after 3, 4, 5 times, you don't have to go crazy with the rewards. Just a simple stroke down the neck is they're very receptive to that. When people make too big of a deal with the rewards, the concept has already been lost. You know, so sometimes when I hear out in the arena or at a show, good boy, and a slapping on the neck for 5 minutes, I think the horse is going, okay, what was it that I was a good boy for anymore?
And why are you hitting my neck?
Oh, my gosh, Eric. Yeah. That reminds me of the story my friend Donna, bless her heart, she was trying to teach her horse to jump, and he was kind of a hot thoroughbred, and every time he would go over a fence, she'd, oh my God, good boy, slapping his neck and everything, and eventually, she started taking lessons with me because she's like, I don't understand why when I jump a fence, my horse bolts.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Let's see what you're doing. And then, oh, my God, like, the horse was trying to run away from her praise, you know, like, don't slap my neck. And I just told her, like, you can't abuse your – he doesn't understand that that's a good boy. He thinks you're just beating him in the neck.
You know, there's another point about this, and not to get off the subject too much, but usually the louder the person is in the warm-up or on the course telling their horse is good boy – they're relieving the nervous energy that they have, that, and they just tell me how insecure they really are on the horse. And then it's a double-sided sword, though. I mean, I think rewarding the horse after you get the desired response is also a release of tension on the rider's part, too. So when I have a student working with a horse and they're a little nervous and they get just that little bit of improvement, I'm not looking for perfection. But if the horse shows me a little bit of improvement and they get that reward, the rider, when they get that pet, calms and releases that tension as well. So they feel like they're making progress instead of trying and trying and trying, and the horse is losing the concept of what they're being asked to do.
See, I would not have thought that that would be an insecurity of the rider, but you're exactly right. And thinking about it, she was terrified to jump. So now I know when I'm in the warm-up and somebody's hoot and hollering, I just know that they're scared.
Yeah, usually I just tell everyone, I don't want to hear any emotions as far as the jumping goes out there. Let's just play our game. And you know what? It trains you then to be more secure in yourself and not worry about what other people are thinking about their horse. There are so many stories I hear of somebody coming to an event and always telling me, oh, this is my horse's first event. Oh, this is my horse's first jump. Oh, this is my horse's fifth jump. This is my horse's 12th jump. I'm like, when are you going to lose count? And basically, they're just telling me what, you know, how insecure they are because they don't want me judging them. And that's a big part of training, too. You need to be comfortable with yourself and not worry about what other people are thinking and listen to your horse instead of what other people are thinking about you while you're riding.
Okay, Eric, that, by the way, is the most, one of the most difficult things for a woman to do ever. So that just opened up a whole new can of worms.
That could be a whole nother show.
Exactly. That's what we'll talk about next time. Because as far as women, and even me, you know, when I ride by myself so much of the time. And I try to think of it as there's somebody watching me. It can be from a mile away. And then I feel like I work a little bit harder. I don't know why that is. I'm a woman. We can't figure ourselves out.
It's not just women. It's men, too. Because I remember I went through a period in my stadium jumping that was so worried about what other people were thinking about my riding that I was just having rails left, right, and center until then I would get even more emotional about it. And until I finally just looked really deep into it and go, why am I so worried about what other people think? It's a beautiful day. I'm at a horse show. You know, there's starving children in the world too. Why am I getting so stressed out over this? So in the long run, you ride for yourself.
ride for yourself. Gotcha. That well said. And you know what? I'm going to end it on that because that was perfect. The perfect way to think about it. And Eric, I really hope you'll come back. And I know we were a little bit scattered for this entire segment talking about getting the horse to move forward and then not overpraising and showing your emotion and then basically just riding for yourself. But I hope that you'll come back and we'll break these down even further.
I would love to. Can I do a plug on a clinic that we're doing? I'm doing a clinic at our farm in Tryon, North Carolina. Our farm's name is Renovatio Farm. And we're having on July 7th and 8th, we're doing private videoed lessons. I would be doing a lesson, and I'm having them videoed by a good friend of mine who's a professional videographer and does really good sound to the video as well. So people could really see what they're doing on the horse along with instruction. And I've always learned a lot from my own videos and then taking accountability for everything that I do. So it's a really good opportunity, and that's July 7th and 8th at Renovatio Farm, and you can look up the information on my website, and that's ericdirks.com.
Now, Eric, we're going to post links to all of this on our Facebook page as well, and we'll put it on our website as well, and that's, of course, Horses in the Morning. Just search for that. I want you to come to Phoenix, Arizona, and do a clinic because people always have green thoroughbreds that they need some help with, and we'd love to have you out here. Come to our area, and definitely good luck. I'm actually going to be doing my first training level with my off-the-track thoroughbred that weekend, so I'm going to miss the clinic in North Carolina, but I'll keep you posted.
Well, good luck for you.
He's going to do his 12th training level jump, and then he's going to do his 13th. No, I'm just kidding.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Well, thank you very much, Glenn and Jamie.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on.
That's funny. You're a little bit like that, though. You know you have the little bit of the overpraising problem. Isn't it funny that this topic came up each week in the last 2 weeks?
It is, and it's just, I think it's something that, again, you know, I have been incredibly insecure on Jet because he's been a very difficult horse. And it's just so funny when he said that, I was like, oh, my God, busted. Because you're right. Like, it releases tension for us to praise our horse because, like, oh, my God, we did it. Oh, good boy. But really what we're saying is, oh, my God, I did it. I survived.
Exactly.
So,
while beating the horse.
Yeah, exactly. He's just great. Well, I'll try to direct a little bit better because I think that there's so many great things that we skimmed through with Eric, and maybe if somebody has an off-the-track thoroughbred training question, feel free to email it to us. I'm jamie@horseradionetwork.com. We'll get Eric back on to address these questions that you guys have.
Judy Shepherd actually posted on our Facebook page about a minute ago. She said, how do you deal with an OTTB that deals with separation anxiety? And you know, of course, that's not limited to thoroughbreds. That's a overall question about any horse can have that. But it is something. Separation anxiety can be absolutely awful to deal with. It can be the worst thing. And we've all had to deal with it.
So frustrating because you just, you don't know what to do. Well, let's schedule Eric to come back on and talk about that because I'm sure Judy's problem is not going to go away in a week.
That's true.
Relevant by the time we get Eric back on.
Well, yesterday, after you went and saw your end of the world movie and got all into the positive things in life because the world is coming to an end on December, whatever it is, when the asteroid hits, I then did what I usually do and presented a list that was all about dating horsewomen, which had a lot of truth in it. And then you got all upset because you considered it negative, and you challenged me today to come up with the 10 good things about dating or marrying a horse girl, and I did that. I did it with no help. Jennifer did not help with this. I did it all by myself at 4 o'clock this morning when I got up. So I will have that immediately after this Fleeceworks commercial.
Fleeceworks manufactures pure Australian merino sheepskin and merino wool saddle pads and accessories. Their pads produce a vital thermal balancing layer to pull excess moisture and heat away from the horse's back, allowing muscles to work at maximum capacity without overheating. Fleeceworks Australian Merino wool is breathable and hydrophilic, able to hold and store 35% of its own weight in liquid. A longtime staple of the medical field, Australian Merino fibers have no equal when it comes to delivering a temperature-controlled, pressure-absorbing layer. The Fleeceworks philosophy, minimum bulk, maximum performance, and they have a variety of anatomically correct pads incorporating technologies and designs that address the individual needs of every horse and rider. Ask for Fleeceworks saddle pads and accessories by name at your local tack and feed store, or visit them online at fleeceworks.com.
Glenn, I gotta ask because I want to know, is this your idea of a positive, happy list about dating horse chicks, or is this in turn going to have some negative spin that you're going to put on every single one of them to use it as a negative connotation? I'm nervous. Oh, I guess we lost Glenn. See? It's already looking more positive. Jennifer, he doesn't.
Glenn has left the room.
And again, all I wanted to know was, is this a negative or a positive list? Glenn is back. So
I've
got to ask Glenn, what I wanted to know was, is this going to be a list that I will be able to spin into some super negative thing because you're actually backhanded, they're backhanded compliments?
You have to judge for yourself. I spent a lot of time on this list today, and I didn't. It's the top 10 good things about marrying or dating a horse girl, and I didn't make particular. You also have to remember, I've only ever dated and married one. That's all. It's not like I went through a whole bunch of horse girls.
Hey,
so
America's horse husband, so you better speak for men everywhere.
That's right. That's what I did with this list. This isn't specifically about Jennifer. This is in general. So this is an in general list. All right. Are you ready? Now, these are in no particular order, okay? The first one. You can cancel your gym membership. You will be getting plenty of exercise around the farm, cleaning, mending, fixing, chasing, repairing, building, etc., etc., etc. So that's a good thing. You're going to save money. Canceling your gym.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead, and I'm not going to address the fact that these are all going to be negative in the underlying. Because if you read that again, I could pick out about 100 things that sound negative about that. But you know what? I'm going to suck out the positivity of all of this list. So basically, you're saving money and time by not having to go to the gym.
That's just what I said. Number two, you don't have to lie about blowing off work to go to the track. She will go with you. That's a positive.
Okay.
Number three. Tight-fitting breeches. That just speaks for itself. Number four, horse girls are very strong. You will never have to worry about your beer bottle cap again.
So number strong five. Rednecks. Go ahead. I don't do it with my teeth, though.
Horse girls tend not to be clothes hounds or wear tons of makeup, so you will save money there. We're just saving money everywhere dating horse girls here today.
And, you know, We're not the most high-maintenance people. Chad says that's one of his favorite things about me is I don't need to go to the mall every weekend and buy a bunch of new clothes. I will go to Goodwill because Goodwill has $7 jeans.
And that's how Jennifer shops, too. She's the exact same way. She goes to Goodwill and buys her. She says, well, why should I pay $50 for jeans? I'm just going to crap up in the barn.
Exactly. So, and Jennifer, is your Goodwill half price every other Saturday? Because mine is.
You know the Saturday.
They have two for Tuesdays.
Oh, I like that idea.
And I kind of like the girl next door. And if you're kind of guy that likes the girl next door, then horse girls are perfect because they are so the girl next door, it's not even funny. That's
are you
what they
that
are.
Playing? Okay, I'm not going to break this down and say that.
A lot of guys like girls next door that don't wear a ton of makeup and all that stuff. And I'm just saying horse girls fit that bill.
Okay.
Why would you put on a ton of makeup to go to the barn, you know? Okay, number six.
Move on.
They tend to fall asleep early, so you'll have the remote to yourself after 9 p.m.
Man, are you in my house? Are you in my house?
Now, you got to say that's a positive, right?
Sure, we will wake up, though, and go, dear God, can you please turn SportsCenter down? You've watched it 4 times in a row. There is no reason that you need to see highlights from a stupid baseball game 7 times.
Why is it that men have to have the volume turned up loud when they watch TV at night?
And they're right next to the TV. It's in the bedroom. It's not that far away.
Continue, Glenn. Sorry.
I don't want me to go to sleep. I actually listen to my iPod, so I'm not guilty of that one. I listen very quietly. Number 7, they're easy to... A new shaken fork, a new pair of paddocks, or even a lighted hoof pick will make them happy. That is true. When we shop for you, as long as we get you something that's for the barn or for the horse or something to do with the outside, it's easy. A wheelbarrow makes you thrilled. It's so funny how that works. The one time Jennifer so wanted a drill, because we lived on our own farm then, and we didn't have a cordless drill. She wanted a drill. If for her birthday that year, if I had not gotten her that drill, I would have been in divorce court. And I got her the drill, and I didn't want to get her the drill because I wasn't totally understanding horse husbandhood at that point. It was early on, and I bought her the drill. She's never been so happy to get a power tool. She got a power tool, and she was thrilled. That should
that's like
a wife there.
And I can see that, because getting a power tool is great. But here's what makes a power tool even better, is when you have a man that will actually do the power drilling for you.
Wasn't that the given after you give the sort of given?
And not many women, I must say, too. I would not ask for a power drill, but I would give you one.
But Jamie, that directly relates back to number 1 about canceling your gym membership.
Amen. Exactly. You're going to have to publish this online. All right. You got any more about how awesome we are?
3 more. Okay. You can save money on haircuts because horse women are great with clippers.
You make a good point.
Number 9, horse girls are not afraid to get dirty. You can take that one any way you like. And number 10, have you ever seen the 2-point position? I rest my case.
Oh, my God, that is filthy. I love it.
Oh, I could have gotten a lot filthy. I was trying to keep this PG. It could have gotten a lot worse. But what do you think?
Well,
that's not too bad. I put some thought into this, Jamie.
You did. Well done. I think you did a fantastic job. I think this is going to go viral. Okay, it's going to go viral.
I'm going to post it on Facebook for those that want to share it.
Absolutely. Well done, my friend. Well done. I'm so proud of you, see.
I want to challenge the horse. We have a lot of guys that listen to the show, more than any other show we do on the network. I want to challenge them to add to this list, but please keep it PG and not X. We'll post it on Facebook.
Glenn, I don't think that anybody's mind could go anywhere else with your last one.
What? I just made a statement of fact.
We're all adult here, okay?
Did you notice? I was very clever about that. I put it right after the horse girls are not afraid to get dirty. I added that one. I had the order right there.
You did great. Well done. I need to...
I know you're expecting, because horse girls are so compassionate and they're so lovely. And I was going to put a list like that together, but it just made me want to puke. So I had to do this one.
Yeah, exactly. You don't care how much we'll bring home any stray animal. You don't care about that. That actually makes you guys mad. But you do like us in britches. So congratulations. Very well done, my friend.
Thank you. Let's do a couple news stories. I had one here, and I want to congratulate. Talk about a positive story. There's a state senator in New York I want to give this to. Let me see if I can find it right here. Oh, it moved a bit. So this state senator by the name of Patty Ritchie is sponsoring 2 no-cost Eastern EEE vaccine clinics for horses this week in New York. She got together and actually got a grant and put together the veterinarians, and they put the locations together, and you can actually go get your horses vaccinated for EEE. free of charge, and she did this on her own volition. So I want to congratulate her for doing that. And they're asking you to fill out an online form. If you just look up EEE Vaccines New York, you'll find it on Google, and you can figure out where to go. But they're doing these two events, and they're hoping that hundreds and hundreds of horses show up. They're going to be ready for large crowds.
Now, I want to ask you, what does EEE stand for, Glenn?
Eastern Equine Encephalitis.
Encephalomyelitis. Very good. Well done. Proud of you.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's encephalitis.
Encephalitis. Well, all I remember is that those Pfizer commercials we used to have to read were really difficult. Oh, that was I think that was the Western or Venezuelan encephalomyelitis. You're right. This is just encephalitis. I just remember you used to always make me read those commercials.
Because I couldn't read them.
Well, good for her. That's awesome. I hope
that starts happening in more states. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I've got a rescue story for you, Glenn, because this is a new one. We had yesterday.
How can we have any more new ones? We've covered 1,000 rescue stories.
I know. And yesterday, a foal being born in a mud pit was definitely, I thought, a new one. And we can't possibly top that one. Well, in Manchester, England, this is according to Horse and Hound, the River Rock burst its banks. And the Manchester Fire and Rescue had to be called out in Rockdale on Friday night because the river flooded, burst its banks, and were swirling around these horses, and they had to call the fire department. These horses are trapped in a fenced off wooden fence paddock, and they're up to their neck already in 30 minutes by the time that the fire and rescue gets there. The fire brigade took two boats out onto the swollen river and cut through the fences containing the horses. Mind you, not one, not 2, 3, 4, 5, but 6 horses are standing neck deep in water in a paddock, which they can't get through or get out of. The firefighters cut through the fence, put halters on everybody, and led them out of these paddocks. The RSPCA inspector, Charlotte Brooker, said, "We were on high alert with the flooding, but I was shocked when I arrived to see these ponies in danger of drowning. Apparently, members of the public said it happened very suddenly over a period of an hour. We got one pony out just as the water was reaching her muzzle. They had to improvise, put horses in gardens and backyards. They fed and watered them. They also rescued 4 dogs from the flooding." So big cheer goes out to the Manchester Fire Brigade, saving 6 horses and risking their lives to do so, and the 4 dogs. Wow. Isn't that a good story?
Yeah, it is a good story. Well, you're right. We've never had one where we rescued 6 horses at once.
And to cut through the fencing that was already underwater, just awesome. I'm so proud.
I didn't know you could do that.
I didn't either. I don't know how they did it. I didn't ask any questions. I just read the article.
Well, of course, it's Olympic time, and the Dutch team, the Dutch dressage team, rather, has always been the one to lead the way in the Olympics and major international competitions because they just pretty much have owned a dressage through the years. I think they're going to have some serious competition this year with some of the other countries, but some recognizable names will be leading the pack this year, and representing the team will be Edward Gaal. Now, Edward Gaal, Totalist, is the one you would remember him with, and he has actually qualified for the team with a horse that's only in its first year of international Grand Prix competition. So Edward didn't let losing Totalist stop him. He's got one called Glocks Undercover, who's going to be at the Olympics this year in London in just a few weeks now. Annalind Cornelissen will be there with Parseval, of course. Everybody expected that. They've been proven themselves many, many times, and I think that they're one of the leaders for the competition this year. And then, of course, Anki von Grunsven will be there. I got through those names. Wow. She'll be there as well. Now, I think it's kind of interesting that the Dutch trainer is Anki's husband. So I just thought that was an interesting.
It doesn't matter. this team is ridiculously good.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
These names are the top names in the world, and they're going to be competing against us in the Olympics. My God, we better be on our game. Between England's team that was announced yesterday, Great Britain, obviously, England, and then our team, and then the Germans, and then the Dutch, and the Netherlands, obviously. It's going to be such a tough competition that Rafalka better be on her game.
Yes, for sure.
Even Colbert is going to be have his hands full.
Oh, when is he come on again? Is he a once-a-week show, by the way?
He's every night.
Yeah, has he? No, so nothing else has happened. We haven't heard about anything else.
I watch it every day, just about, and he makes comments about horse ballet all the time, but nothing that I've seen has been brand new, a brand new segment. I think, you know, it'll just be as it gets closer, he'll talk a little bit more about the sport of the summer.
Sure. What else is there? Anything? Oh yeah. Union Rags is back in the news, right?
Yes, Michael Masses, you know, Union Rags missed out on becoming Horse of the Year last year to Hansen. And it was a little bit of a surprise, I think. And so they really want Union Rags to be Horse of the Year again. And, you know, on a side note, the fact that I'll Have Another won the Derby and the Preakness, usually that would lend them almost a guaranteed Horse of the Year. However, I don't know if they'll give it Horse of the Year, give him Horse of the Year, because they've sent him to Japan. You know, they sold him to Japan. So, in just a backwards horse racing kind of way of the right, you know, the sports writers are the ones that vote on it, and you have to be part of this group to vote on it. Well, the I think that Union Rags is in a lot better position at this moment to get Horse of the Year. So, Michael Mass is also trying to become Horse, have Union Rags be Horse of the Year. So they're going to try potentially to run him in the Grade 1 $1 million Haskell Invitational, which is at Monmouth Park, and it's going to be on July 29th. He's also thinking about the Grade 2 $600,000 Jim Dandy at Saratoga on the 28th, but he hasn't decided which one, but this is his quote. I would imagine, though, if you're trying to be the three-year-old champion, you have to run in the Grade 1 races, and that would be the Haskell. And if he runs in the Haskell and wins, obviously he's going to be pointed towards Horse of the Year, but he has to beat these horses. Bodie Meister is already in the Haskell, and Doulahan is already scheduled for the Haskell. Of course, and Bodie Meister, second place in the Derby and Preakness, and Doulahan ran third in the Derby, and It's gonna be good. It'll be an interesting race to follow, and that's kind of the trail to Horse of the Year.
Terrific. Well, let's take a break for our song of the day, and then we're going to be back to talk to thehorse.com with the weekly horse health report. Today, we're talking about low heel syndrome. Something I don't know much about, actually. But we got a song for you today out of Templeton Thompson's songbook called The Long Run.
Yeah. peg, it's the long run.
By Templeton Thompson, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. And thanks so much to Fleece Works for being a sponsor of today's show. Now, we're on a positive note, Glenn, and we're trying to be happy, positive people, are we not?
That's right, yes, and I think we've done a very good job of that today.
Well, as soon as we get the horse.com on, I'm going to have to run outside because my horse somehow got himself stuck in the riding arena, and there's no water in there, so I need to go let him out of the riding arena. I don't know how he went in and then got the gate closed behind him. I don't know. I don't ask. He's just standing there, and he looks really thirsty. I went and checked on them, as I do every day during the song, and I need to go help him.
All right, good. No problem. Why don't you go do that, and I will do the commercial, and then I'll go to thehorse.com. Michelle should be ready at that point.
Okay, I'll be right back then.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Well, bye. You know, we talk about equity manufacturing a lot at equitymfg.com. We talk about the flexin' fork and the shakin' fork and how we all love it. Well, they do make another product, and it's called a T-post adapter. And, you know, if you have fencing set up that you have the no-climb fencing, you know, the little square wire fencing, and you have it set up on T-posts, those green T-posts, one of the things you want to do is put a top wire over it, or a top rail over it, so that the horses don't lean on it. Some people use a hot wire, but they break, and you know it just becomes a problem. Well, Equity has come up with a solution, and they call it the Equity Adapter. It's this thing that fits over the top of the T-post, and what it allows you to do is actually hook some vinyl fencing, vinyl fence rails to it. So you can actually put up what looks like a very nice vinyl fence rail along the top of your T-post. And it does two things. It provides a sight line so that the horses can see the fence better. It allows you to put up your no-climb fencing, and it stops the horses from leaning over and stretching out the no-climb fencing. So they solved a problem here and made it very affordable. This is obviously much cheaper than putting up, four rails of vinyl fencing, if that's one of the things you were looking at doing, or wood fencing. You can do this a little bit cheaper if you're putting in a temporary fence or you just don't want to spend that much money. Take a look at the Equity Adapter. It comes at equitymfg.com, and the whole thing will help you save some money when you're putting up your fencing. That's equitymfg.com. While we're waiting for the horse to get on here, I just wanted to mention that everybody seemed to enjoy my list, so I posted on Facebook. Feel free to repost or do whatever you want with it. It was a lot of fun to put together, and I know it's not quite what Janie was expecting, but I thought it was. And now it is time for...
It's time for the weekly health report from horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
And, of course, Jennifer's music means it's time for Michelle Anderson from thehorse.com with the weekly horse health report. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Glenn. Hey, so I particularly like horse girls are good with clippers, so you can save money in haircuts.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. I have never let Jennifer get near my head with clippers because it would be a buzz cut.
You don't want me near you with clippers, although I'm pretty okay at pulling mane, so we could do that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I'll just sign up for that.
Oh, that's the way to do it. There you go. I do love it. You've never had Jennifer take the horse clippers and shave the back of your neck, Glenn?
No.
I've done that.
I do that to my husband all the time. Come here, let me get the back of your neck.
You know, if she's going to do a buzz cut, then I would let her do it. But I think I'd kind of look silly in a buzz cut. Although, as gray as my hair is getting, I'm thinking about it, actually.
You should have your
knife.
Celebrate.
So, anyway, this morning we're going to be talking about low heel syndrome. Hopefully it's Dr. Jones.
Yeah,
on the
we're
going
to. Let's talk about something else. She's trying to get Dr. Jones on the line.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Jones has a sick kiddo this morning, so I know she's juggling things around to get to us. So, anyway,
Did she survive the flood?
I had a text from her this morning. So, last night she said that she was expecting it, but it looks like she did okay. She's still around.
I think she's ready, so we'll get her on the line. Good morning, Dr. Jones.
Good morning.
Have you survived the flood? You're here with us?
Yeah, how about you guys up there in Ocala?
Yeah, we're fine. We learned that our property drains pretty well.
Well, nice that's a good farm. Thing to learn.
You like good drainage.
Yeah.
So it was a bad pun.
We had a client say that their basement flooded, and I thought the same thing. My husband looks at me and he goes, how did their basement flood? They're living on a hill. They didn't clean their gutters out. All the water kept rushing right around the foundation.
I didn't even know people in Florida had basements.
That was my thought.
Yeah, on a rarity, you'll find some. And we're in a hilly area, as Jennifer knows. We're in a very hilly topography type area. We actually took her to the highest point in Florida. And so some of those hill areas, you can definitely put basements in with no problem.
Wow, didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well,
all right, take it away, Michelle.
Okay, so are we ready to talk about low heel syndrome, Dr. Jones?
I hope we are.
Is this something that you come across a lot? Because I know that my experience is like this is all the
what
time,
is
these
it?
Horses with these low heels.
Yeah, what is it? None of us knew what it was.
Maybe since I'm dealing with it every time I write that check for the farrier. I just think everyone should know what it is. So, Dr. Jones, what's low heel syndrome? Can you tell us all about it?
Well, basically, they got really no hoof wall at all in the heel area. Seriously, they are walking on their heel bulbs and almost some of them on their coronary band. They can have some predisposition to it, but a lot of times it's a little bit more brought on by lack of farrier work. I wouldn't say poor farrier work, because some of the horses I've seen just have not seen a farrier for quite some time. And what happens is their toes get very, very long and their heels get very, very short, and they start pounding and landing on that heel area, heel surface, and then that gets completely underrun, meaning it's lower amount. The proper measurements, and I'm sure you have the attachment for it, Michelle, for knowing that if your horse has just got a proper hoof when your farrier's done or when you purchase your horse or any time, is you should have an even parallel line with the back heel from coronary band to the shoe or coronary band to where they hit the ground, parallel to the front part of the hoof from the coronary band down to the ground. Those should be parallel lines. If you have no line at all because your coronary band's on the ground, that's a problem. And if you have one where that line diverges forward too much and then the front is a nice slope and it's not parallel, then you have a problem as well. And that's what we'd call the underrun heels. I hope I described that well enough for the radio.
Yeah, and you know, and you're not kidding when you say that coronary band can be on the ground, because that's what I was dealing with almost a year ago when I got my guy. His giant bulb in the back of his hoof, and then he walks on it. So it's looking better. But there's also these terms, contracted hoof or contracted heels or crushed heels. Is that the same syndrome?
No, they're not. The crushed heels could be. They could be misconstrued as the same syndrome. But both of those have their own sequela or means of sequela to them. The contracted, you'll see a lot of times in, I am not trying to pick on any kind of breed or predilections here, but in the gaited horses, where they tend to have a lot of shoes on, the front and back feet, for action that they want to have. And those horses tend to get a smaller and smaller, smaller heel space. Now, the space I mean now is going from inside to outside, or medial to lateral, or lateral to medial. They get very, very contracted where the heel's not spreading and expanding and taking the bulk of weight pressure and shock absorption in the back. You'll see the frog start to disappear from hitting the ground or being close to the ground to almost up inside the hoof, the sole itself. That's more the contracted heel issue. The crushed heels is the tubules, as we call them, in the hoof wall that go from coronary band down, which is what aligns the actual wall to put the shoe on, is rolled underneath in the heel area. And that can look like a low heel syndrome horse, but they're actually rolled underneath. The part of the hoof wall is rolled underneath, and that comes a lot of times with wearing pads with your horse. And sometimes it's not that at all. They haven't had good farrier work for a while. That could be a sequela to it, or they've had their shoes on for too long. But usually pads will crush the heels of a horse. So placing pads on your horse's feet are usually a kind of a temporary fix for a while, and then they take them off. They may have to put them back on, but it's not something that should be on the horse the rest of its life.
So what kind of clinical signs do we see in these horses with low heels? Why should we be concerned about it?
Hopefully you don't see any problems with these low heels, but in dynamics, it's going to cause some problems down the line. Those that don't ride very often, weekend warriors that have low heels in the horses, they may never see a problem until they decide to go for maybe a 10-day trail ride vacation. And towards the end of that trail ride, the horse is starting to get a little ouchy, and that's because they're bruising their heel area for constant concussion with the added weight and the added work, also the terrain they're on. A lot of times, though, in the performance horse, which is probably where you're at, Michelle, mm-hmm. is those horses will tend to overstretch the ligaments in the heel aspect of the foot, and you will get tears in your ligament or your deep digital flexor tendon structures. And then those horses will become very short-strided or increasingly lame because they have no heel support to support the backside of their foot that's taking a lot of the brunt of the weight of the work they're doing.
That's why I write those big navicular checks, to avoid that.
Yeah, a lot of people call that navicular. There can be problems with the actual navicular bone from that low heel, but a lot of times it starts off with more soft tissue injury, bruising, overstretching tendons and ligaments, and then you could go into the navicular issues.
So it's kind of like having a domino effect. You have one thing that starts going wrong, and then this cascade effect behind it. Is that what you
hate to say? I hate to say the old phrase, no hoof, no horse.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to take care of their feet in order to make sure that your horse stays sound. So, yes.
If I may interject here, when you're, say, horse shopping and you're looking around, is this something that you can kind of see? Is it like, oh, he's got no heel, no nothing, or is this something that's kind of an internal structure and you can't see as well?
Yeah, you can definitely see it. And if you're really serious about the horse you're going to get and you're going to do some work with this horse performance-wise and you trust your farrier and love your farrier, bring your farrier with you. Pay him for a farrier visit, but you're going to go see a horse for a pre-purchase. That'd be the inexpensive way to kind of weed out all the many horses you're looking at. Rather than paying a vet to do a bunch of pre-purchases, grab your farrier. Say, hey, I want you to look at a horse. I'm going to pay you your farrier visit that you come to me, like a trimming visit or a shoeing visit, whatever you guys decide on for monies. Have them go out, evaluate the horse's foot, and he doesn't need to talk to the owner. He's working for you at the time. You guys can leave, have your discussion, call the owner back. Yeah, I'm interested in the horse. No, I'm going to move on to a different one, whatever you want to do. That's the easiest way if you don't feel you have a good eye for that on a horse's foot. The other thing, too, is when you see this low heel syndrome, you really need to know, how often was that horse seeing a farrier? It could be the fact of lack of farrier work. Now, to gain heel back, and we're kind of rolling into treatment ideas, to gain heel back is a nightmare for any farrier. So if your farrier does come along and he sees this low heel on a horse, he's going to say, oh, my God, I really don't want to deal with that. Please run. Because to grow heel back is very difficult to do. A lot of people say it's impossible to do, but you can give the support to the back of the horse's foot over time, but it has to be over time.
So, and before we jump too far into treatment of the low heel syndrome, it's, you mentioned that farrier work can cause it. Are there some horses that are just more predisposed to growing more toe and less heel than others? Or is it probably
related
to farrier
work? There's not a study that says that for sure, but if you ask a farrier, each farrier will have their opinion on that, and ask a veterinarian, each veterinarian will have their opinion on that. It depends on the horses they work with. So they'll say, oh, yeah, absolutely, thoroughbreds always have low heel. Or, you know, absolutely, I'm trying to think, you know, because that's the one I run into mostly, is the thoroughbreds have the low heel issue. Absolutely something else, you know, they might say the some other breed will have that issue. But
yeah.
I don't think that it's fair to say it's breed predilection. But granted, just like you and I, growing our fingernails and things like that, some people have a better ability to do that via genetics, but also via diet too. And then again, how you take care of them.
So you mentioned you treating these and farriers not wanting to have to deal with it, so maybe they're... Maybe I should be really happy my farrier charges me so much money to fix my horse. My farrier has done, he's performed miracles on my horse. But what can your vet and your farrier do
well,
to help your horse?
Well, the vet-farrier relationship, yeah, is an absolute. And, you know, it's really nice when you finally get a good combination team that work together well. And knowing that ahead is always good. But anytime you have a foot problem with the horse, it's always good to have an x-ray to show the farrier, and the farrier, you know, can work with the vet and put their minds together and come up with a good plan for your horse. Each case is going to be different. Sometimes you put a large wedge pad. Sometimes you just do a rim pad. Sometimes you do a full foot shock absorption type pad.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the usual things. Some of them, it's just basically putting a spreader, wider heel, wider base shoe on them. Some, it's putting an egg bar shoe on. So I can't say that, you know, this is the recipe and you're going to absolutely stick to it every single time. Each case is going to be different. The x-rays help a lot, because a lot of times with these low heel syndrome horses, they have very little sole. So they may be getting bruised easily through the sole surface as well, and just placing a shoe on will help elevate them off, start to have them grow heel, but of course you're probably not going to see it in your 4 to 8 week or 4 to 7 week reset time. It's going to be over a period of time, because it takes an entire year on average for that hoof wall to grow out from coronary band down to the bottom. So you've got to give it at least 6 months of working with the farrier and possibly working with your veterinarian with repeat x-rays to make sure that everything's lined perfectly and that you're going to get that growth.
Now, and my horse also has a thin sole. You know, it's this cascading effect of everything that's gone wrong with his front feet. But with that thin sole, my understanding is that there part of it is due to a lack of circulation, or possibly due to low circulation. Have you had any experience with that, or trying to help improve circulation in those front feet?
Unfortunately, that hasn't been proven enough for us to say that that's definitely a good source. But we can prescribe. Isoxaprine is the most common drug that's prescribed for blood circulation in the horse's foot. In my hands, I don't see it help in any way, shape, or form. Some people will add some irritant or blister type idea to try to encourage some blood flow to the back heel area. I just always shun away from that, because they're already having some heel problems as it is. I don't want to add to the irritation or inflammation back there. So there's a couple ideas out there, but nothing's been scientifically proven.
Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of art and a little bit of science, right?
Absolutely. And I find farrier work, you can't beat a good farrier for when it comes to these horses. They really do a fantastic job.
Yeah, I definitely concur. My horse is an example of that. Is it possible for these horses to ever go barefoot, or should they ever go barefoot?
I hate to say it, probably not. probably not. A lot of times these horses have shelly, as they call them. The farriers will call them, and some of the veterinarians will call them shelly-type hoof walls. And they're just, they're like brittle shells, and they chip off very easily. They're not very good sound hoof walls. Again, to the different people with different types of fingernails. Some people have very good sturdy fingernails, and some don't. And that shelly hoof wall just can't hold up to the beating that it's getting in the ground, and it needs to help with the shoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have these visions of my horse being 28 years old and still getting these very, very expensive, very fancy shoes. And my farrier has given me a list of things, if he ever dies, what the next farrier should not do with my horse. to keep the deal.
Because this has been... your horse does.
But this is, you know, it's been such a long process to get some heel growth. It's really frustrating for anyone out there who's dealing with it, but worth it when you have a nice horse and want to keep them going and keep them comfortable. So anyway,
well, I mean, based off of that, with our pre-purchases, I do a confirmation evaluation with my pre-purchases, and I think every veterinarian should. By no means are we evaluating to say that by this confirmation the horse is going to be, you know, your next Olympic jumper. But it can at least give you some idea about how much longer you may ride the horse until you have some sort of issues. Or these are issues I see right now, and with some help or with some good work, with your farrier, you're going to just maintain this the rest of the horse's life. And are you comfortable with paying for that maintenance? So, you know, knowing it ahead of time really can kind of prepare you for what you're going through now, Michelle. And I think at 28, I don't think you're going to be performing your horse as heavily as you are now. So I don't think you'll be putting those expensive shoes on. But you're probably putting some shoes on.
I have to tell you, I think I go into a coma when I write the check for the farrier. Because I don't remember how much it is until I go to enter it into the ledger. I'm like, really? I wrote a check for that much? But my horse is worth it, and it's one of the reasons that I ended up with such a nice horse is because he had this issue. So for me, it was a balancing act, making the decision to purchase
here,
and maintain
it. Here, I'm going to tell you, ladies, there is nobody who will talk you out of buying a horse faster than Dr. Jones.
Oh, my goodness, that's terrible.
You're the vet, and you're protecting the buyer and letting us know what the seller might have. But no, I mean, there's a horse that, oh, potentially might have the navicular problem. And you were like, okay, unless you're ready to do this, don't do it. And I didn't do it. And I'm really glad that I didn't do it, because listening to this could be a potential part of the navicular. Oh, my God. I'm just glad I just kind of washed my hands of the whole thing. Now, granted, you know, people are going to assume risk and responsibility for certain things, kind of like Michelle did. So I love the fact that, you know, it's not like don't do it. It's if you did it, here's how to manage it. And I've always appreciated that about you, Dr. Jones, and that's why we love this segment, because these are real-life things that people have to deal with. And, Michelle, I must comment that every single time my farrier comes, I have to ask her how much it is. And I'm like, I swear, I write the check and I forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it. So
yeah,
I
am a zombie.
That.
I just sign it. Here you go.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, God.
There's another vacation I'm not going on.
Yeah, exactly. Chad says to me, goes, when all three horses get shot at the same time, he's like, there's a plane ticket. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's very, I mean, you guys are really stating the fact here. A good farrier really will make your life easier. Granted, it's going to cost you, but I'm not trying to say it's going to cost you your home to fix your horse's feet. But you really do have to pay attention to a good farrier that's going to take good care of your horse's feet so you can enjoy them for why you bought them. You don't want to sit there and have that nagging, I got to wait another 6 months before my horse is going to be sound enough to ride. That's ridiculous. You should be able to purchase a horse that's rideable now to enjoy. And if you're buying a fixer-up house and you're not going to live in it for a while, that's a different scenario. But most people don't buy horses that way.
Yeah, and my farrier, he's thinking two shoeings out every time. He's like, this is what we're doing this time, this is what we're doing next time, and this is what I hope we're doing, you know, three times from now. And so having that kind of partnership, and also he's talking to the vet, and they're figuring things out, and they're taking radiographs. And yeah, I could go to Hawaii, and it would be a lot of fun, but I really like my horse. So we, on thehorse.com, there's article number 17204. If you get in there, it talks about the grading system for these low heel horses, and there's some great radiographs that show just how low that heel gets and how the horse is down on that bulb on the coronary band in the back. So that's pretty much what my horse looks like if you look at that picture. So check that out, anyone who's dealt with this. I feel your pain, but there is hope. Right, Dr. Jones?
I'm sorry I couldn't give him a quick fix answer for it. It's not a quick fix. It's no. Due diligence and a lot of mutual work between the vet and the farrier. And then, unfortunately, farriers out there, it's a lot of your back-breaking work. So.
And we appreciate your honesty. Thank you guys very much. Of course, FloridaEquine.com is where you can find Dr. Jones. TheHorse.com for Michelle. Thank you, ladies, very
Thank
much.
You.
We'll talk to you again next week.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Well, now I know what low heel syndrome is.
I didn't know it was a syndrome.
I didn't either.
They just have crappy feet. Crappy feet syndrome.
We can call it crappy feet syndrome. Hey, I got to tell you before we wrap up the show today, we posted yesterday. Some days we post the question of the day and it just takes off with a question. We had somebody made a comment yesterday. It was Aubrey made a comment about her new tattoo, and that started a whole conversation on tattoos we hadn't really planned on. And I said the question of the day, do horse people get horse tattoos? Oh my God, lots of horse girls have tattoos. We had like 50 comments on there. There was one, though, in particular I was just reading. Tammy said, and she said, I relate to Jamie's story about finding the perfect horse for her barn sign. Remember you were saying that you didn't want to get a horse tattoo because you were afraid they'd screw it up and you'd be living with this imperfect horse on your body your whole life. She said, yes. I bought my husband a tattoo of her favorite hockey team as a Father's Day gift. I wonder if he had the whole team tattooed on his... anyway. He said he would get me one once I found the perfect horse tattoo. It's 6 years later, and I'm still looking. So you're not the only one out there.
Exactly. That's the problem, is it's too hard to find that exact perfect horse.
I found a lot of the women, and I thought this was charming, a lot of the women had tattoos, and I'm saying women because I didn't see too many men actually right on here. A lot of the women had tattoos that were in memory of a horse that they had. So
trying to get the tattoo number of my old horse. You know, that would be honor.
Tell everybody what that was. It was like
L36775 was my old horse's tattoo number, and I'm still accepting submissions. If somebody can come, I even contacted an artist, and like, can you make L36775 look pretty? Because if it doesn't look pretty, it's going to look like a prison tattoo.
Well, that,
unless I get it on my upper lip.
It would look like you had spent some time at Rikers Island.
Exactly. So that's why I never got the tattoo. But that would be the way to honor him, you know. And so, I don't know. I think that you should add to your list of cool things about dating horse chicks is the awesome body art that they all get.
Apparently.
I mean, come on. Sexy tattoo.
Hey, Kat, I have to say, this is for Kat, our friend at Draper Therapies, though. I'm kind of surprised because she said that, and she has a ton of tattoos. And she said she has no horses, and she loves horses. So now you have to get another one, Kat. I didn't realize they can be expensive. I didn't realize I've never gotten a tattoo. I have no idea. But I didn't realize how expensive they can be. Some of the conversations I read in other places were about how expensive they are. It can be expensive to get a tattoo the size Aubrey got.
Oh, yeah. That's several hundred dollars. They are expensive.
And a lot of pain, apparently. I won't sign up. Yeah. I'm not signing up for that one.
You're not a chat guy. You're definitely not a chat guy.
No, Jennifer's not either. Now, your husband, Chad, have tattoos?
Oh, God, no. No. I told him I wanted to get, like, you know, just some, like, barbed wire around his arm or something. He's not into it. My husband, to me, looks like the non-celebrity version of the lead singer of Maroon 5. Which is Adam Levine. And he's like the PG version of Adam Levine. And, you know, we watched The Voice which is the TV show, and Adam Levine is on that, and Adam Levine has sleeve tattoos, which I find very sexy, and I just thought, honey, if I could just put you in a white t-shirt, some shades on you, and give you some sleeve tattoos, I'm like, it's win for everybody.
Oh, you know what? I just looked him up. He does kind of look like Adam Levine. You're right.
I know. That's his celebrity look-alike, but he needs to be a little dirtier and a little naughtier. He's like super clean-cut military guy right now. I need some tattoos, some sleeve tats, and I'll have my rock star and my husband all in one. It's a win-win.
Okay, I keep going back to my list because number 9 was horse girls are not afraid to get a little dirty, and apparently Jamie just pointed that out right here. I think we'll end on that today. If you want to hear past episodes of Horses in the Morning, just go to horsesinthemorning.com. You can hear them all there, back to episode number 1, all 430 some of them. And also, you can hear all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate you being here. Have a terrific day.
And spay, neuter, and geld, people. Thanks for joining us. Good chat room today. I just say it. Hi, Mom. And then she's listening right now.